Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Christian has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore.
.28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello and welcome back to the Over and Back NBA podcast at thepodiumgame.com, which is part of the HB Basketball Network. I'm Jason Mann. Joining me again is Rich Kraich. Rich, glad to have you back talking about some old school NBA.
Oh, yeah, this is going to be a particularly fun episode. This came together, I think, honestly, with, like, what, 2 days' notice. We got a guest. We got all the research done. And then now you and I, we had a, I think, 15-second production meeting before. So, but these are the ones that always turn out really good. You know what I mean? Like, the ones that we spend weeks researching and stuff are still good. But this one, I feel, is going to be awesome. I can't wait for this
one.
Let's
not hype it up too much. I mean, I don't want to disappoint people, Rich. Let's not get crazy with the expectations.
Yeah, once we start getting confident, that's when we start.
There you go.
Because I think our bashing us and like, oh, I don't know why they kept us on the air. That kept us hungry. And now,
exactly.
Yeah,
now we're getting cocky. We're not even.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. No, I got you. Yeah. So this one's gonna suck.
All right.
This is gonna be
fair
awful.
Enough. So we're gonna talk about the topic of NBA expansion, which, you know, maybe doesn't sound like the sexiest topic at all, but I think it's just kind of fascinating. We're so accustomed to a pretty stable, you know, both NBA and overall sports landscape when it comes to professional sports. I mean, yeah, sure, there's been expansion, you know, in our lifetimes here and there. I don't think there have been any teams that have gone away, at least not in the major sports. Certainly some moving of cities, but for the most part, you know, the way the conferences and such have been aligned has been pretty similar for the past, you know, 20 to 30 years, depending on the sport. But that was, of course, not always the case, you know, particularly in the NBA. We've talked about it a little bit before, but just so much expansion in the NBA and really in the other major sports in the 60s and 70s, and just what an upheaval that felt like to sports fans. I mean, sports fans are kind of averse to change anyway. I guess most people are, and so to completely change the landscape like that, I guess unless you're in one of the cities where you're getting a team, is just sort of like, you know, I don't know what to do kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely startling, and yeah, we'll run some of the numbers here, but yeah, the 60s and 70s, I can't imagine being a fan at that time, and especially just it's kind of fun though. Obviously I live in Chicago, so I don't know if I'll ever have that feeling of, the only thing that would come close is if like we got another football team or something like that, but just that feeling of intrigue to be a Seattle or something like that and be getting an MLB team and an NBA team in the same, you know, in a similar time frame or whatever, just it's got to be fun, and it's just so different. I just don't know if we're ever going to get, I don't think it's possible that we'll ever get anything near what we had in the 60s or 70s, just because, you know what I mean? Who are those markets that we're still kind of, it's not like in 1 year, you know, there's always kind of the teams that are floated around in all the sports and the Vegases and, you know, Virginia and Nashville. And that's, but I don't think it's going to be something where like 1 year they just add five teams. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that doesn't seem super likely. No. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about just sort of the impact of expansion on the NBA. You know, did it really water down the NBA? How significant? Yeah, I think you crunched some numbers on the disparity in records in expansion seasons. You know, maybe asking the question if any of the expansion drafts hurt any possible dynasties or title teams. And, you know, just talking about, you know, some of the, obviously not all expansion teams are created equal. Some, you know, from the jump, you know, were pretty good. Some were really bad for a long time and failed in their initial cities. So it's kind of interesting to compare and contrast that. And of course, you know, the notable players in each expansion draft, I think that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Hall of Famers. We're going to cover all those Hall of Famers, just notable players, funny players as well. So
sure.
I mean, Rory Sparrow needs his
Rory Sparrow needs his day in the sun.
Right, exactly. So we're not going to gloss over him.
Of course not.
It's going to be a great show. I can't.
Yeah. Believe. So I just kind of want to do a brief comparison over how fast the other major sports expanded, because the NBA they added a team in 61, the Chicago Packers 62 season, and then went to. Then added basically 8 teams in 5 years. Then so through 71, we're up to 17 teams, and then added the Jazz, and then added the 4 ABA teams in 77, which I don't consider that quite the same. You know, even though obviously there's that similar upheaval, when you're adding established teams, I think it's a different dynamic.
Mm-hmm. And as we sort of saw with those teams as well, it wasn't sort of your run of the mill, because a lot of these expansion teams get like the bottom halves, or, you know, the bottom of you know, rosters, and try to make a team out of that. And you saw those ABA teams get acclimated pretty quickly because they were a legit league that we found out, you know, a legit league with legit players and legit teams. So, yeah, I don't like to count them necessarily in the same thing as well, because I don't think it's quite the same.
Yeah, and hockey, I think, is the most similar to NBA. In fact, it kind of even expanded faster because they doubled the league in 67 from 6 to 12 teams, and then they added 2 more each in 70 and 72. And in 74, so they went from 6 to 18 teams in, I think, 7 years. Yeah. And then they had a merger in 79, and then added a bunch of teams in the 90s. But that was, you know, kind of the big 12-year flurry. Again, you know, that was bolstered by a merger, but that's still quite a bit, a similar rate, I think, to the NBA. And it kind of makes sense because the NBA and NHL are the most similar sports in terms of when they have their seasons, number of games, mm-hmm. you know, all that kind of thing. And you know, obviously, most of the century was dominated by baseball. I think, you know, the NFL kind of became heated competition in the 60s, and then the NBA really made its mark in the 80s, and the NHL has, you know, kind of been the fourth sport, has shown some growth, but is, you know, definitely behind the other three.
Certainly, yeah.
Yeah, and the NFL, they were actually relatively slow. They had the 12 teams, added a couple each in 60, or added one each in 60 and 61, then again in 67 and 68, and then they made the big, they added the 10 AFL teams in 70, and then have just added, you know, a few teams since, to get to 32. So their big jump was the, you know, the merger. The actual expansion was relatively slow. And then
right.
Baseball, they around the same time, 61, 62, they added 2 teams each both years. And then 69, they added 4 more teams. So they went from 16 to 24 in 8 years, and then added again a couple in 77, and then added a few more in the 90s. But so theirs was, you know, kind of fast, but they already had a lot of teams, so I don't think it quite had the same level of impact. It's not like doubling your league like the NHL did, or the NBA, you know, almost did. So, I think there's some interesting differences between those groups. So I think we're excited to have him back. We're going to talk to Curtis Harris of ProHoopsHistory.com about just what's so fascinating about expansion, and some of his thoughts on you know, different expansion teams and different stories from the from this time in the NBA. So
yeah, he got mad at us for not inviting him.
Yeah. Like, so
why did you call me? Well, all right, fine. Yeah. So we have him, like, as we mentioned in the first episode, we have him on retainer now. I don't remember if we said that off air or
I believe we had it. Well, either way, people know now. So so we'll be back in a minute with Curtis Harris. All right, and we're back here. We are talking to the great Curtis Harris of ProHoopsHistory.com.
That's a lofty intro.
Of ProHoopsHistory.com. Curtis, welcome back to the program.
All right, I think I'm your first 2-time guest.
Yeah, so we're so glad to have you here. You know, we announced that we were going to talk a little bit about expansion teams, and you were a gamely volunteered to talk about it with us. So, first question: what's just so fascinating about the history of NBA expansion? Just kind of the idea itself to you.
I mean, it's kind of like this. It's like an American history, but like, through basketball terms, that, like, you know, the United States started, like, hugged up on the East Coast, and so, like, the NBA pretty much did the same kind of thing. It was hugged up on the East Coast, a little bit in the Midwest, but then slowly they start to spread out, and, you know, the Lakers are the first team out on the West Coast, although they're not expansion, but still, like, they moved out there. And by the late 60s, you had the Phoenix Suns as an expansion team. And then by like 1975, they had added in the Blazers and the Sonics and all those teams. So it's just cool to see like the NBA like finally spread its wings, be able to like get stronger and expand. And yeah, just add on a lot of teams and a lot of places where people finally got some NBA basketball.
Certainly. Who's your favorite expansion team? Because we all kind of have our favorites. And essentially, I'm hoping you're going to say the 1961 Chicago Packers, and I want you to give us your favorite Chicago Packers memories, because we just got done talking about a half an hour about our fair memories. So what are yours? And your memories growing up and watching Packers.
Yeah,
your Charlie Tyra
memories.
Right? My child, I have no memories of the Chicago Packers. Like,
okay.
Like, come on, man. I'm way too young to have watched
the Chicago Packers. No, none of us had anything either. We have no idea.
We have no idea. So. Yeah. There's like a couple of clips on YouTube. But actually, the coolest thing about the Chicago Packers is that they robbed the New York Knicks of the number one pick in that draft. It was 1961, I think. Yeah, 61. Because yep. The Knicks, their owner, Ned Irish, he was obsessed with finding a good center. So he would always draft, and the Knicks sucked back then. And so they would always draft at number one, some big stiff of a center, and they never got it right. But in 1961, Walt Bellamy was going to be the number one pick, clearly. And he was actually like finally like a surefire, like he's actually going to be successful. But the Packers got it founded as an expansion team, and Ned Irish raised hell, saying like, you know, he's bragging about how bad the Knicks were. He was like, we finished last in the 1961 season. We deserve the number one pick in the 1961 draft. But the other owners were like, we're sticking tighter to Ned Irish because he got on everybody's nerves. And they said basically, you know, F you, we're giving the number one pick to the Chicago Packers. So the Packers got Walt Bellamy. And a few years later, Ned Irish finally traded for Bellamy, like in 1965 or so. So he always had like a Jones for getting Walt Bellamy. He's just like the Captain Ahab going after the white whale. He was just always trying to get Walt Bellamy.
It's funny. Remember how expansion – or tanking just started these past few years. Yeah, not historic at all.
never happened in the past.
Just damn you, Sam Hinkie.
Yeah, exactly.
You jerk. Ruining our league.
Yeah. Just another one. Another one that I think actually kind of shifted the course of NBA history for a few years was the Suns in 1968, and they did their expansion draft. And the L.A. Lakers left Gail Goodrich unprotected in the expansion draft. And you remember that 1968, that offseason, that's when the Lakers traded for Will Chamberlain. So conceivably, if they weren't stupid, they could have kept Gail Goodrich and would have had Elgin Baylor, Jerry West, and Will Chamberlain, all those four, in the 1969 finals against the Lakers or against the Celtics. And the series went seven as it was. So with Gail Goodrich on the side of the Lakers, they probably would have won that series easily. But, hey, they were dumb. They left Gail Goodrich unprotected. So
was there, like, a justification for that at the time? Or
I've not seen any justification for it. Only thing I could think of is that, they knew he was decent. Like, he averaged, like, 13 or 15 points a game. So they probably figured they would have to pay him a little too much money. And, again, trading for Will Chamberlain, that is going to cost a lot of money to have Will on the team.
Sure.
But I can't imagine Gail Goodrich would have cost that much money where you couldn't afford to pay him with Will Chamberlain.
Yeah. I mean, he did make a pretty significant leap, you know, in production when he went to Phoenix, for sure. It was an all-star first time there. So, that's definitely interesting. Can you think of any other good stories of just, expansion stories of inept owners or weird teams or just general madness?
I mean, let's see. Well, yeah, let's keep moving along chronologically. Like the New Orleans Jazz.
They're basically the answer to this question.
That was just a total disaster, the whole existence. They came around like 74, I believe. And, 74, 75 season. Yep. And again, hey, Walt Bellamy, he comes up again. He's one of my favorite players. he played one game with the New Orleans Jazz that season. But he was perfect. He made both of his field goals. I think he made both of his free throws in the game he played. So Walt was perfect, and then he retired, or after he got cut. But you can make it more rosy. He retired after that perfect game, 6 points, perfect from the field. But the Jazz were pretty terrible. They had like 25 players on the roster that first season, and like three or four different coaches. It was a complete mess. And gave away the whole farm to get Pete Maravich. The very next season, I think they traded like three draft picks to the Hawks. And then when they got Gail Goodrich, he comes up again. They traded for Gail Goodrich from the Lakers. They gave away like another two or three draft picks. One of them became Magic Johnson. So they totally did not run that franchise right. And it's pretty obvious why they moved 5 years later to go to Utah.
Yeah, maybe we sort of asked, and I don't know if you necessarily answered, but who was your favorite expansion team? If you had to pick one that you're fascinated by or something interesting, maybe one that you haven't mentioned before, who would it be?
Well, the most fascinating one, I think, is the Indianapolis Olympians, who started playing like 1950. And they're really odd because they were actually partly owned by the players on the team. And most of the players had played for the University of Kentucky. And they had also played for the 1948 U.S. Olympic team, so that's why they had the name Indianapolis Olympians. But they had a pretty great team for their first two seasons because they had, like, Alex Groza and Ralph Beard. Both of them were all-stars and were on the first-team All-NBA. But then Ralph Beard and Alex Groza got caught up in a gambling scandal dating back to their college days. Nothing in the NBA. They had never done anything in the NBA. But while at Kentucky, they took money to shave points. So they didn't throw the game, but they like kind of let up at the end of a game. They let it go back to the betting margin. But the NBA, they banned both of those guys for life. So the Olympians staggered, and they faded away by 1955. They just folded, went out of business. So that's kind of like, I think, actually one of the most interesting teams ever in the history of the NBA because it was player-owned, the gambling scandal, which I think has a lot of unanswered questions because a lot of players were taking money in those college scandals. Those are the only two NBA players that happen to get caught up in it. So you have to wonder, like, did the NBA, like, specifically target this team that was player-owned so it would be easier to ban those two guys instead of targeting the Knicks, who were owned by Ned Irish, who was pretty powerful, or the Philadelphia Warriors with Eddie Gottlieb, another powerful guy? Maybe they just decided to go after the weakest team, the weakest link they could, and get rid of that team and kind of put a hush on the whole gambling situation.
I also like that the Olympians have a player named Wawa Jones, which is now my new favorite NBA name.
Wawa. Yeah, Wawa is pretty good. Never an all-star, but he's a pretty good player.
Yeah. That's a good one. I wasn't actually familiar with that story. That's pretty awesome. Do you think there's like a key to having a successful expansion team, or maybe just something that like to avoid that, you know, the owners of these teams or GMs, you know, constantly made mistakes? Maybe it's just like going after like the local star or something along those lines.
I think the best way to have success is for the ownership to kind of take a long-term view and not just try to immediately make the playoffs within like, you know, two or three seasons. Like the best example of that is like the Charlotte Bobcats, where they always were just trying to like just make the playoffs, like just make the playoffs. We got to get the fans back instead of kind of taking a long-term approach and just kind of taking a breath and realizing like we are an expansion team and this isn't like 1968 when like you expand and it's only filling like 13 to 14 teams and still you got a good shot at the top talent. I mean, that's how the Bucks won a title. Like they got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar their second season. But the Bobcats, you got to realize, like, you're not going to get the number one pick that fast. So you got to just kind of – well, actually, they did. They got, like, number two pick. They kind of sucked at that. anyway, they got to make a Okafor for it. It sucks for them. But, you know, it's like it's just realizing that you got to kind of take a long-term approach. So I think the Dallas Mavericks in the early 80s were the best from now just, like, a pure luck because the Bucks like, won a coin flip and got cream. But the Mavericks had a pretty good build-up of their team where they – they kind of swindled the Cleveland Cavaliers for a few draft picks, like everybody was back then with Ted Stepien. So they were able to corral a lot of draft picks, and they got, you know, the first, like, 3 or 4 years of their existence, they got Rolando Blackman, Mark Aguirre, Derek Harper. Who's the guy? I can't remember the name of their big center. James Donaldson, that's what it was. James Donaldson. So they got a lot of good young players through the expansion draft and through the regular draft the first couple of years. And they just took it slow, and they slowly rose, you know, like 25 wins or so when they first started to, you know, mid 50 number of wins by like 1986, 87 and made the conference finals in 88. So pretty good success. I think that the Mavericks, the best expansion team in terms of building up.
Sure. An interesting aspect that we sort of talked about a little bit and like to hear your thoughts. Any would-be NBA title contenders or teams that would have, you think, been title contenders that maybe did not become that because of the expansion draft, where they lost a player that would have been key down the line or something like that? Is there one that sticks out to you?
That's something I've never really considered. I gave the example of the Lakers earlier. Like, they were obviously still a title contender, but I think they might have thrown away a title by not keeping the clamps on Gail Goodrich. I don't think any team has lost out on a title directly from an expansion draft. Like, they lost a key player, they couldn't recover from it. But the Milwaukee Bucks in the 80s, though, that's a team that I think missed out on just making the NBA Finals because of the expansion draft. And that goes back to the Mavericks. Because when the Mavericks joined the league, that caused a conference realignment. So the Bucks got moved from the West to the Eastern Conference. And, you know, as great as the Showtime Lakers were, they did have a weaker conference to go through. So they kind of made the finals easily most of the years. They only had a couple of challenges. But the Eastern Conference was clearly the better one back in the 80s with the Sixers and the Celtics and, you know, the second half of the decade with the Hawks and the Pistons rising up. But I think the Bucks, you know, by the Mavericks joining the NBA, I think they got pushed into a really tough situation where I think they could have beat the Lakers one or two of those years in the 80s to reach the finals if they had stayed in the West.
The one that was mentioned, and I'm not sure it really qualifies because, you know, they even won the title without him, but the Pistons losing Rick Mahorn, I'm not sure that was absolutely that significant of a loss. I mean, they were going to lose to the Bulls, you know, in 91, you know, with or without him. But that's kind of, I think, maybe a decent example of an important role player, you know, being lost due to the expansion draft.
Yeah, that's a good example. Yeah, like, like everybody loves Rick Mahorn, unless you were playing against him at the moment. But pull the chair out from under you. Yeah, that's a pretty good example. Yeah, pretty good player. Obviously not starter or anything, but yeah, I mean, in a cold series, like a guy like him could swing the balance.
Is there any time that you think that, like, expansion really watered down the NBA?
Oh, yeah. It was. It's clearly the late 60s, early 70s. And, I don't want to say – I kind of don't want to say watered down because, like, it kind of – you know, kind of cheapens what the players did at that time, but it still kind of spread the talent out too thin, coupled with the ABA existing at the same time. And clearly there's just, I don't want to say too many teams, but it just happened too quickly where we went from, like, you know, 10 teams in 1965 to like 25, or not that much, about 25 professional teams by 1975 between the NBA and the ABA. And clearly you can't more than double the amount of professional teams in a 10-year period and have some stability for what was happening. So that's why, like, the Lakers won 69 games, why the Celtics in 72, they won 68 games in the season. The Bucks won 66 games in 1971. So clearly they were running up those win totals on some pretty crummy teams like the Buffalo Braves and the Cleveland Cavaliers in the early 70s.
One aspect that we want to talk about a little bit here, we're going to do it as kind of an interlude here, is the dispersal draft, which is obviously much different. It's the exact opposite of an expansion. Is there any time that you think a team really benefited from the dispersal draft, maybe outside of the Celtics, because they obviously very, very clearly were helped out by the dispersal draft multiple times, but no, maybe the Celtics as well. In general, teams that benefited from the dispersal draft in your mind?
Oh, yeah. The Philadelphia Warriors in the mid-50s, when the Olympians went belly up, the Warriors got Joe Grabowski, who clearly, like, nobody's going to know about him except some, you know, dork like me who goes thumbing through all this stuff. But Joe was like, he was like a lunch pail type power forward. He roughed people up, give boards and stuff like that. Pretty good defender. And the Warriors got him in 1953 after the Olympians folded. And 2 years later, they won the NBA title. He was a pretty big piece on that team. So clearly they got the big benefit from the dispersal draft. And then, of course, like the ABA, that's also kind of a different situation, though. When their teams folded, clearly a lot of players got spread around the NBA, and that kind of shored up a lot of teams. Chicago Bulls getting Artis Gilmore. The Blazers getting Maurice Lucas. And, of course, could have had Moses Malone, but they kind of, you know, stupidly let him go. One of the greatest scenes in breaks for the game, where they, like, they talk about Jack Ramsey, who had just, like, he and the general managers had just traded Moses to Buffalo, and then they saw him practice in the Blazers game. They're like, holy crap, this dude is like a monster and a beast. We got to find a way to keep him. But they're like, too late, he's already traded. Paperwork's already been put in, can't take it back. Like, no take backs, too late. So, and, those are a couple examples of them having a big impact.
Yeah. And last question, I think actually we're all going to weigh in. What cities would you most like to see the NBA expand to? Pretend that it doesn't, like, maybe you're not really a big fan of expansion. Maybe you think it might make the league too big. But just what cities would you like to see the NBA in currently today? You know, that might be interesting to you.
All right, I'll give three, because I hadn't planned on this question, so I'll kind of hedge my bets here. Vancouver, Seattle, and St. Louis. Those would be the three cities I'd like to see an NBA team in. Vancouver, because they got kind of done dirty by Stu Jackson. He just totally incompetent. Seattle clearly got done dirty by Clay Bennett. And St. Louis, I just have an affinity. The St. Louis Hawks is one of my favorite teams. I love Bob Pettit. So probably not the best city to go back to, but just from a personal standpoint, I would love to see a team back in St. Louis.
What about you,
I'll weigh in here. Do you want me to weigh in? Yeah, I think the two that stand out to me, Kansas City and Louisville are both ones I like. I don't know if Louisville could sustain it, but, I mean, they do a pretty good job on the minor league baseball front. And Kansas City is one that sort of stands out, obviously, with the ready arenas and that sort of stuff. But those are two that always kind of come to my mind. San Diego is an interesting one as well, but I wonder how well they could really support. I mean, that'd be one that'd be cool to see, but I could see that coming into a problem as well, just because I don't know if they'd support it unless it's a really good team from the get-go. But I think Kansas City would be one that would definitely welcome them with open arms, and obviously has the arenas and everything sort of ready to go business-wise. So,
yeah, I'd say Seattle, of course, would be the primary one. I think Louisville would be neat. You obviously have that Kentucky Colonels history, and that's an area that supported basketball for for a long time. Historically as well. Also on a personal level, because I live here, I'd love to see Columbus have a NBA team. I don't think it's going to happen, of course, because even though it's a good city and it has a arena and it's actually bigger than people think, just not going to happen because so close to Cleveland and because we have an NHL team, which I would gladly trade to any city for an NBA team if you're out there and can make that decision.
So no Vegas for either of us. No, nobody.
No, I don't think Vegas is good. I'm not
a Vegas fan either. Yeah, I have to fight people in baseball all the time, and I'm like, I don't know if it really would work there. I mean, it's the season ticket base is huge, and that's not gonna. I don't think that's really gonna work in Las Vegas. No, I'm not a fan of them either.
Yeah, if Columbus could get a D League team, though, I would be very happy. So
you know, actually,
yeah, is there any?
I would love for the NBA to like really try to make sure that D League teams kind of went back to like old NBA teams. Like I know Fort Wayne has one, so I love the fact that Fort Wayne has a D League team. So like, at least St. Louis or Louisville or like Rochester, if they can't have like a, well, clearly they're not going to have an NBA team. I think it'd be cool to have all those old NBA cities have a D League team.
That would be neat. Yeah, Baltimore, obviously. Yeah, that would be that's a neat idea.
And what I was going to ask, is there any chance that any of those, you know, D-League teams could ever become a willing enough to be a team that would be, you know, put into the NBA? I mean, is there any chance? I mean, there's a lot of weird towns, and they're close to other NBA cities now, and they're getting closer. Obviously, is there any chance of anybody moving up? There's no chance, like a Des Moines, Iowa, or, you know, the Iowa Energy are going to do it. But is there anybody that stands out? I mean, to me, I have a tough time with any of them saying that they could make that leap.
Yeah, I mean, I think they usually put them in cities where you're not likely to be able to support an NBA team.
Right.
Yeah,
I don't think any.
Yeah, and as they try to keep the D League and like NBA teams like a 1-to-1 affiliate, I think they're going to make sure the talent level never gets good enough when these D League teams, they can overtake the NBA club, because the NBA club will just take out whatever good players are on that team and put it on their roster wherever it gets to that point.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't think it's like English or European soccer. We have like the moving up and down in leagues. Otherwise,
that's
the Sixers,
right. Sixers
would be in the D League right now. So anyway.
All right. Well, Curtis, thanks so much for chatting with us. And is there anything that you want to let people know that you're working on, or just anything that you want to plug in general?
Nah, I got nothing to plug right now. Like I'm
Yes, you know.
I'm like kind of a semi-sabbatical of writing about basketball history, so I got nothing to write in right now. So,
well,
I'll let y'all know if something good comes up.
Sounds good. Well, you've done some great work in the past. So much great work, which people can check out.
It would take enough people to it would take enough time for people to get your old stuff. So they got time.
Yeah. So go to
Pru Hoops. That's my history. It's always there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
So go to pruhoopshistory.com and check out what Curtis has written. It's some fantastic stuff. Thank you so much, Curtis, for coming on the show again. And we'll be right back to begin part one of our look at NBA expansion teams.
All right. Thanks again to Curtis Harris of ProHoopsHistory.com for his great insights on expansion. So now, Jason, you ready to get into it? We have our part one, which we're calling as the teams, early teams, and obviously we'll start 1961, 1962 with the Chicago Packers, the team that went 18-62. Had two Hall of Famers, though. They had Walt Bellamy and Slick Leonard, who went in as a coach. So any thoughts? What's your favorite Chicago Packers memory, Jason, when you're sitting down with your father watching old Chicago Packers tapes?
They really packed them in.
Because the NBA was obviously on the cutting edge of technology. And
absolutely. Yeah, I mean, this is kind of funny because of just how inept this team actually was. I mean, they were really bad. They actually changed their name to the Zephyrs in the next season and then finally moved to Baltimore in 63. You know, they it's interesting because, you know, if you can't make a go of it in Chicago and if you can't make a go of it, like just kind of pulling from a relatively small pool of teams and you're still 18-62, that just probably means that there was quite a bit of ineptness there. And it's funny because the minutes leaders on the team other than Bellamy and Slick Leonard were Andy Johnson, Charlie Tira, Ralph Davis, and Horace Walker, who none of those four players played in the league again after 62. And one of the
classic expansion team. That's what we're talking about, people. Exactly. Not ABA teams. No, that. Yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah. And another guy who's pretty famous is Gene Conley, who's actually also an MLB pitcher. He was a longtime reserve from the Celtics. I'm reading through the Terry Pluto book, Tall Tales, you know, which is about the 50s and 60s in the NBA, and actually just recently talked about him, and he was a colorful character, I guess you could say. He was definitely a guy who enjoyed a good party.
Absolutely. And the Packers, you mentioned, were just awful. I mean, points per game, they were ninth in the league. Opponents' points per game, fifth in the league. So there you go, something to hang their hat on. Offensive rating, 90. So they were ninth in the league. And then defensive rating, they were seventh in the league. So, yeah. And expected win percentage or expected win-loss, they were also last in the league. So this was just a very awful team, and it took them until mid-January to get their 10th win, which is going to be a trend that I sort of covered a little bit. That's not uncommon for expansion teams that we'll see. I mean, there was a period where you'll see where they're okay, and then there was another period where they were awful. This one was awful. So they, not a lot to hang your head on for the Chicago Packers, unfortunately.
And then in the next few years, I mean, obviously they moved to Baltimore. They mostly stayed bad till about 69, and then they had Unseld and Monroe join the team and were, you know, a strong team mostly throughout the 70s, culminating with their championship in 78. So, you know, there were better times ahead, but it did take a while for them to erase the Packer stink, so to speak.
I have to imagine. I wonder the hatred of Chicago, because nowadays, I mean, because of the Chicago Green Bay Packers, you know, football rivalry, that calling a team the Packers, I can't imagine, but maybe it wasn't as ridiculous then. But like now, I can't even fathom like a team in Chicago being the Packers, even if it's like relevant to any sort of like industry or whatever. Like, you just couldn't do that. And I feel like it was still sort of that way. Maybe that's why they didn't get supported. So that's why they had to play at neutral sites like half the time. So.
And I'm going to make a note of this throughout. The Packers joined the Western Division and even stayed there with the move to Baltimore. So I like the – I think it's interesting to look at how this – the effect was on division and later conference alignment. Sure. So moving on.
I'm going to do one thing. Let me see. Are they the worst? They are. Okay, yes, I did want to sort really quick. They are the absolute worst offensive rating of any expansion team.
Oh, there you
go. So I have these stats here. Let's see if their defensive rating. They were second to last in defensive rating. this is not going well.
Well, no, wait a minute. I thought, isn't Lowe good in defensive rating? So they actually were second best?
I'm sorry. Yes, you're correct. You're right. Sorry. I just sorted that wrong.
There you go.
Correct. They're second best. But that's, And again, the league is very, very different at this time as well.
Sure, so yeah. I mean, you're talking about nine teams.
Yeah, exactly. So very, very different league there. Expected wins, they're not the worst either. So they're pretty okay. But just absolutely the worst in offensive rating. But we'll get to all the other stats as we go on. So
next we have the 66-67 Chicago Bulls, who actually finished with 33 wins, which I believe is the best of any of the expansion teams. And they even made the playoffs.
Yeah, they had the best expected win percentage as well. They were expected to win. They were expected to go 31-50 and went obviously, as you mentioned, 33-48. So, not bad.
Yeah, and
go those guys.
They had their most notable players were Guy Rogers, who was a Warriors guard, who was a Hall of Famer later, and then Jerry Sloan, who was a very good Bulls player through the late 60s and into the 70s, then later, of course, legendary coach of the Utah Jazz, and then other key players. They actually got Red Kerr in the expansion draft, but then he ended up being their coach, so I found that kind of amusing. He had retired as a player, and then he just like, oh, well, you'll be a coach.
I'll just coach. You guys mind?
Which, you know, was common, actually. Player coaches were still, you know, pretty common in the league at this point. And funny enough,
stayed with that organization, obviously, the rest of his life. I mean,
yeah, right.
In a commentating role and all that stuff. So it's very interesting.
Yeah, exactly. And they also had they also had Bob Boozer and Erwin Mueller, who were their minutes leaders anyway, who weren't necessarily that notable of guys, but you know, so they were able to put together a pretty strong team, and I think it makes sense, you know, because again, it's only a 10-team league, so you're still pulling from a pretty good talent base. The ABA didn't exist yet, so it makes sense that, like, hey, they were actually pretty good, and they, you know, they didn't stay mediocre for long. I mean, they had I think 4 out of 5 seasons in the first half of the 70s they won 50 or more games in a row. Then they struggled and for the next, you know, decade until Jordan came along, but you know, they had some good teams there that, you know, have not that have sort of been forgotten about.
Yeah, the Dick Motta years, a lot of Western Conference Finals, a few semis as well, but just consistently playoffs and then deep runs in the playoffs obviously.
Yeah, they had a really strong series against the Warriors, I think. So, yeah, some good stuff.
Those are the Chet Walker years, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and Bob Love and, you know, guys like that. So,
and then they had a lot of awful years with Artis Gilmore and Reggie Theus.
Sure, those were not so good. But they joined the Western Division, and then the Bullets moved east. So basically, we're geographically sound at this point again.
Yes, which won't always happen with these expansion teams, where sometimes they have to fit, and a team that's very east is in the west, and very west is in the east. But sometimes it works that way. So as I mentioned before, the Chicago Bulls, they were the 1966 Chicago Bulls were the best expansion team by defensive rating. So good for them.
Yay.
Go you guys. And as I mentioned, expected wins and expected losses, they were the best, as well as expected win percentage. So hooray, the best expansion team we'll ever have, because the rest of them gets a little dicey for a while.
It does indeed. So next we in the next season, in fact, there are two teams added: the San Diego Rockets, who are 15-67, and the Seattle Supersonics, who are 23-59. The only Hall of Famer who was involved in either of these teams was Pat Riley, who is in as a coach, not so much as a player. He was mostly kind of a journeyman, played for the Lakers for most of his career, played for the Suns for a while as well. You know, he was a good player. We also get the first appearance of John McLaughlin, who is going to be, and Jim Barnett as well, who are going to be notable players when we're talking about these expansion drafts. It's funny how these repeat players get there.
There's a lot of guys, as I was sort of doing my research.
Also, Don Kogis, who was one of the minutes leader, in fact, the minutes leader for that year's Rockets. He also was in that Bulls expansion draft. So, and Toby Kimball was their other. You know, these are guys I know nothing about, to be honest.
couldn't tell you much about Tony Kimball's career.
Yeah, so. We'll learn, but right now, you know, not so much. And for the Sonics, they had Tom Meschery, who was a good Warriors player for quite a long time, but was, you know, at the end of his career. Rod Thorne, who was in that great tradition of West Virginia guards after Hot Rod Hundley and Jerry West, and of course is now a, I guess he's an NBA official, but he was a GM for the Nets for a long time. And Walt Hazard, who's also later known as Mahdi Abdul-Rahman, who was an all-star that year. And then Bob Weiss, who was a future coach for the Hawks and I believe the Sonics as well. So maybe just the Hawks. I forget offhand now. But so those are kind of the notable players who played for each of those teams. And it didn't really go well for the Rockets for a while. They ended up moving to Houston in 72 and then had a few strong years in the late 70s and early 80s, but were mostly up and down. The Sonics also were mostly bad and middling team until the late 70s, until they suddenly became an NBA title contender and, of course, won the title in 79. So, but both of teams joined the West and allowed the Pistons to move back east. The Pistons are going to be the victims, so to speak, of a lot of these adding teams. They're going to have to move around a lot because of that.
But that makes sense. That's one of a good territory.
Yeah, I mean, they're in the middle. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Stat-wise, there's nothing too interesting with these guys. San Diego Rockets are our second worst offensive rating team. The Supersonics, they're kind of in between. They're really not significant whatsoever. And the defensive rating, neither of them are super significant either. And they don't really factor in expected win percentage. They're not that awful. They're sort of the middle of the road teams, which is pretty interesting when you see their win-loss records and realize that, those are the middle of the road teams. Like the Seattle Rockets are 15-67 and the Supersonics are 23-59, but we'll get to a lot worse teams later. But yeah, no, as far as like expected win percentage or whatever, the Rockets actually were expected to win 22 games and the Supersonics 26, which is not bad by these standards. They're actually in the top half, which is... It says something for what we'll see in the 70s and 80s with these expansion teams.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next season after that, we get two more teams, the Milwaukee Bucks and the Phoenix Suns. Milwaukee wins 27 games. Phoenix only wins 16 games. For the Bucks, there's Hall of Famers Wayne Embry and Guy Rogers. And again, Guy Rogers being a part of an expansion team. Embry also is, I believe he was the first African-American general manager in the NBA.
I believe so.
And then for the Suns, Gail Goodrich is kind of their big star. He's a Hall of Famer. Dick Van Arsdale also was an important player for them, part of the Van Arsdale twins. The Suns also were coached by Red Kerr. He liked coaching expansion teams in the Bucks.
Did he like it or was he forced to? Well, he wasn't a very good coach, unfortunately. I guess not. I think that played into more of why he was a better commentator than a coach. I'll say that.
So the Bucks had John McLaughlin, who actually was a good player for the Bucks for most of the, you know, for when they were kind of good in the early to mid 70s. He caught on there pretty well. Fred Hetzel, who was the number one pick the year that Rick Barry was drafted. And then Bob Love, who, of course, became a pretty big star for the Bulls in the early 70s, although he played very, very few minutes. So both these teams bounced back pretty well. I mean, actually, the next season, the Bucks are awesome because they got Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. In fact, if I remember correctly, there was a coin toss between the Bucks and the Suns, and the Bucks won that coin toss. You know, so they had five straight seasons of 56 or more wins, won the title in 71, went to the 74 finals. The Suns, they had a couple of really strong seasons in 71 and 72, and then they made a finals run in 76 with only a 42-40 record. They upset the Golden State Warriors, who were really 59-win team, I believe, that year. So,
we talked about them a little bit in the Barry. Or no, that was not the Barry.
Yeah, no, it was
not.
Yeah, that was the that was the year after they won the title. So and then the Bucks, they started off in the East, and the Suns were in the West, and of course the Suns have always been in the West. It would be difficult to put the Phoenix Suns in the East.
That would suck for the road travel. That would suck for the Knicks.
That would definitely suck
to have a home and away
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we got to be in Boston tomorrow. Well, tomorrow, today we're in Phoenix. That would not be good.
No, that would not be awesome.
No, that would not. As far as stats wise, nothing really stands out about these two. Obviously, the Bucks, they're our fourth best expected win percentage team, which is reflected in the numbers too. They're one of the better sort of expansion teams that we have. The Suns are in the bottom half, but we're actually, as we mentioned, not a horrible team. They weren't like 21.3% expected win percentage, which is not good, but. As I said, we'll get to much, much worse in the future. And then offensive rating, defensive rating, nothing too spectacular with either of those teams. So they weren't very interesting in either bad or good. They were just kind of there. So
yeah. So we get a year off from expansion, and then we go to the 71 season. We had three teams. We had the Buffalo Braves, who won 22 games, Cleveland Cavaliers, who win 15 games, and then the Portland Trailblazers, who win 29 games, who are, I believe, the second best expansion team, at least in terms of record. No Hall of Famers in this mix. The Blazers have Jeff Petrie, who was well known for being an executive. He also was I'm pretty sure he was on the 77 title team. Leroy Ellis and Jim Barnett, who's his second of three times he's going to be picked in the expansion draft. And then, of course, future Blazers and Hall of Fame coach Rick Adelman.
It looks like Petrie just missed the he was traded in 1976.
I remember for
Maurice Lucas.
There you go. Okay, I remember him being in the book. I couldn't remember if he was actually on the team or not. But
yeah, no. Okay.
And then the Braves had Bob Kauffman and Don May, neither of whom I honestly know very much about. So, which is kind of a little bit about the Braves. And then and the Cavs had John Johnson, who's actually a two-time All-Star for them, and Bingo Smith, who was kind of one of their early stars.
The Cavs were horrible,
you know,
by the way.
I'm using the term star mildly. But.
Yeah, they were horrendous. January 7th, they were 5-44.
Oh yeah,
which is no good. And they rolled off a few wins there. They had a nice little streak, and then they ended the season obviously at 15-67. They're actually our second worst. I believe they tied for the lowest. Let me run it right here. Yep, they tied for the. We'll get to them in a little bit. No, they're the third worst expected win percentage at 16.2%, and just an awful team all around. Just couldn't play defense very well, couldn't play much of anything. Just a really bad team. They weren't our worst offensive rating or worst defensive rating, but they are not a good team at all. They stand out in this class as being just real. And as you mentioned, we mentioned their stars, and that's yeah.
Yeah, they had Bill Fitch.
I don't know who those guys are.
They had Bill Fitch as their coach. Yeah, well, I know a little bit about Bingo just from knowing a little bit about Cavs history being from Ohio, but yes, it is definitely mild. So the Braves, they had some decent mid-70s teams that made the second round of the playoffs, but nothing particularly special, and they ended up moving to San Diego in 79, becoming the Clippers. The Cavs, actually, they did have a run in the conference finals in 76, lost to the Celtics in a pretty good series. And they were solid in 77 and in 78, and then they really fell apart. And then they had the horrible, Ted Stepien years until 88, where they kind of finally got decent again and were pretty good in the early 90s. And then the Blazers were really not a good team at all until the 77 season, which they won the title. Even with Walton for a couple years, it took them a while to get good. I know the addition of Maurice Lucas, which we'll talk about a little bit when we do the ABA dispersal draft. Spoiler alert. Is a part of that for sure. And then they really, even though they lost Walton and were beset by injuries and other turmoil, other than a couple years of a drop off, they were actually really, you know, pretty consistently very good team. And then, you know, and then great again in the early 90s.
Looking at the Cavaliers franchise history, that's not a very good franchise.
No.
I had assumed that they had been to more playoffs and stuff. It's not good there.
Yeah, they've been to 18 postseason appearances, which is the same number as the Miami Heat, and they've been in the league 18 years longer. So.
That's yeah. Okay, I'm
not,
sorry.
Not so great. So
it's all good now, though, right?
Yeah.
Come on.
I mean, yeah. I'll,
smiles.
I'll,
it's all smiles for me.
I would
now.
Take the Cavs position right now over the Heats for sure. So
exactly. Yeah. So it's all smiles.
So this is the year the conferences were formed. So the Braves and Cavs debut in the East, and then the Blazers and Bucks are sent to, and the Pistons are sent to the West. And then even though it's not an expansion year, the 73 season, right before the Jazz come along, the Cincinnati Royals moved to Kansas City and Omaha to become the Kings. So they go out west, and then Houston goes to the east.
The Bucks, yeah, it's always kind of interesting to remember that the Bucks were a long time a Western Conference team.
Yeah,
as well.
I mean they started in the East, and then I think their title year was actually East.
Was it? Okay, I wasn't sure if it was.
Or I could be wrong.
I don't know. I could be wrong. Yeah,
they started in the East, let's see. They won the finals in. Let's see, Midwest Division. They were in the East. And then they went,
then they went
to the West the next year. And that's kind of an interesting thing, you know.
nice win.
Like, would they have been a better team if they would have had a chance at winning more titles if they'd stayed in the East? You know, I mean, I think it's an open question. I know we're.
And then you can, it gets sort of on the flip side as well. Then you get to the 80s and you wonder, had they been in the West instead of the East, what would have sort of happened? Because obviously they had that huge run in the 80s, but kind of tended to be stifled by the Boston team. It would have been sort of interesting to see at some point, not saying that they would have beat the Lakers or any of those teams, but to see what they would have done in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I mean, that was
at the same time.
I mean,
could not get by the Celtics. Like,
yeah, there were some really strong teams there too. So it's hard to say, but yeah, that is an interesting question. And I think in a future episode, we're going to be talking a good bit about the Milwaukee Bucks in the 70s. So we'll have to explore that at a future time.
Absolutely, that's our big. I'm trying to think of what's his name. I'm blanking on.
You mean Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?
No, not Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Okay. No, I'm starting to think of that's his name? There's a. What is his name? I'm blanking on it. There's like a. Am I thinking of John McLaughlin? Yeah, I think I'm thinking of John McLaughlin.
Oh yes, there you go. Yes.
I'm just trying to think of like a guy that, I mean, not like an awful one, but one that we could sort of like make a some like ridiculous.
The John McLaughlin podcast. Absolutely.
Like somebody would request that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying like an absolutely garbage guy. Like somebody would be like, I really like John McLaughlin. Yeah. I want you guys to talk about him a little bit. Cause like Kareem, everybody knows about Kareem, but he was like, yeah, he's the one I'm thinking of. There's like that sort of in between dude. That's not quite awful, but not, you know, not really.
He's,
worthy just, of a podcast.
He's sort of there.
Yeah. Because Bob Dandridge is pretty solid.
He's absolutely, yes.
He would deserve a podcast.
Right,
so.
And we have a 4-year break in expansion, and then we get the New Orleans Jazz, who, of course, one of the fantastic names in sports history.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I do love the juxtaposition of, or whatever you would call it, of the Utah Jazz. I just love the, sure. I love the contrast there. I think that's a wonderful thing, too. But obviously, New Orleans Jazz is just such a wonderful, you know, name. And however, as a basketball team, not so great.
No, not very good at all. I ran a few numbers here. They, interestingly enough, they finished with 23 wins, but at the end of the calendar year, they were 3-30.
Yeah.
Which is no good. And if you look at their wins, too, they had won. Here's their three wins. They beat Portland by 1. They beat Atlanta by 4. And then they beat the Golden State Warriors by 3. So just eked out those three wins. And then interestingly enough, they had a 6-game win streak in February and actually turned out to be an okay team for, you know, to get to 23 wins after that horrible of a start is pretty impressive.
Yeah. That'd be interesting to wonder like exactly what that happened. If there was, you know, I mean, they had 22 players who played games on their roster that year, including Walt Bellamy playing one game for them.
Yeah, initially I thought, oh, was Maravich hurt or whatever, but he played in 79 games, so it wasn't him at all. Yeah. I mean, he was obviously there the whole time, so yeah, it was very hard. They must have just found some dude off the street, one of these random guys that Toby Kimball again. Maybe it was him.
There you go. Yeah.
The three games, the 90 minutes of Tony Kimball that was the key to those. So.
Absolutely. And they also had
Jim Barnett, who makes his like 8th appearance.
Yeah. They had Mel Counts, who was a backup for the Celtics and played for the Lakers teams that battled the Celtics at the end of the finals. He's the guy who went in instead of Will Chamberlain in the infamous in 69 finals when, you know, I actually made a couple shots, I believe, there. And then E.C. Coleman, who I'm not so familiar with, but played, had the second most minutes of anybody on that team. So it was, I mean, Maravich was actually traded to the team and from the Hawks to the Jazz. And in that trade, I'm looking at Curtis's write-up of Maravich. on prohoopshistory.com, and he talks about the Jazz traded two players, two first-round picks, one of which was used to take David Thompson, who ended up not playing for the Hawks, and then two second-round picks, one that was used to take Alex English, and a third-round pick all for Maravich, which pretty much, you know, gutted the team. And then the Jazz, the next season after the 76 season, they signed Gail Goodrich, and that ended up, they ended up losing the pick that became Magic Johnson because of that, for mm-hmm. the compensation.
All right, and we talked about that in our previous podcast exactly. as well, yeah.
So, yeah, not good luck for them. They ended up moving in 5 seasons. They had 3 coaches in their first season, including 1 game stint from Elgin Baylor.
I would love to.
Moved to Utah on the 80 season.
Did you find any quotes on, like, what did he say? He was just like, screw this. Like, well, I'm done.
Baylor was their GM, I think. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. So they didn't, in the interim, he just said, okay, I'll do it.
For one game. Right. Exactly.
He comes back though.
Yeah. And they didn't make the playoffs until 84. So it was not great. So the Jazz went to the East. Then with the 77 ABA merger, the Nets and Spurs went East, and the Nuggets and Pacers went to the West. Now, that doesn't really make much sense, but it did at least make a little more sense in the divisional context, because mm-hmm. they were fairly close to each other within divisions. It was still kind of messed up, but it wasn't quite as stupid as it sounds on paper.
Right. Yeah, it worked out.
Yes, and it's all going to be settled here in just
so. Very shortly. Yeah,
if you're stressed out about it, like you don't know what's going on, if you're confused,
what's going on? Who's going where?
So
what will become of the Pistons? What what conference will they play?
I don't know. Yeah, the Bulls are still out west too. It's very
confusing. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the Bulls. Yeah.
So. And 80 and 81 season of the Dallas Mavericks become the 23rd team to join the NBA, and they are definitely not a good team. They have Tom Lagarde, they have Brad Davis. Actually, Brad Davis became a pretty good player for them in the 80s, with part of their good postseason teams. And then also they had 77 minutes of Austin Carr. So
yeah, which is always a good, always a welcome addition.
Yeah, it was toward the end of his career. Yeah, Scott Lloyd, Bill Robesine, Jeff Houston, not exactly a murderer's row out there. They ended up 15-67, and I know it was not good.
No, they didn't win their 10th game until March 1st, which is just unbelievable to think of. And interestingly enough, and I ran a few numbers, we'll probably do that at the end of the podcast here, they were 18th out of 23 in attendance. So obviously the Dallas community was more than ready to support their Mavericks. But apparently that I couldn't blame them. I bet they probably did well for a little while, and then a lot of people were just like, I'll wait till they're okay. I mean, that team was really bad. So I don't blame people. And there wasn't a whole lot of exciting players on the team either. But it all worked out for the Mavericks.
Maybe they were busy trying to figure out who shot JR.
That's true. Oh, no, this wasn't the hype of. Yeah, they were busy, man.
Dallas had a lot going on during this time.
They were, they were digging oil.
Cowboys were America's team, too.
Yeah, they didn't have time for the Mavericks, which is interesting. It's fun, and I sort of did a little bit of research, and there are a few expansion teams that don't do that well in attendance, which was just kind of interesting. But, yeah, no, they particularly did not do well at all. So it's okay. They had Ollie Mack, though, who I think Ollie Mack shows up on a few as well. I think, let me find the ones that he was on. He, maybe, was this his only one? Maybe this was his only one. I'm thinking of someone else. Never mind.
This is a Dick Motta coach team as well. So,
oh, okay. Yeah. So he's a guy like him and Red Kerr. Like.
Yeah, they're just a coaching expansion teams left and right, you know. The Mavericks did eventually, and not that far along, in a few years, they actually did get pretty good, and they made a run in 88 where they took the Lakers to 7 games in the Western Conference Finals. So they, you know, it didn't take them long to get to be a good team.
Yeah, you get the Rolando Balkman comes in, or Blackman, sorry, that comes in. Yeah. The other one, that'd be awesome.
They got, you know, Mark McGwire, Sam Perkins, you know, those guys.
Good teams.
Yeah,
one exactly. I love that team. I love old videos of that team, especially, as you mentioned, that 88 team. It's just awesome to watch. And I know they came in an NBA 2K game not that long ago, and I was just like, oh, shit, I forgot that they had, you know, Sam Perkins, like a young, you know, upstart Sam Perkins. I mean, really just a fun team, athletic, super athletic team. They remind me a lot of the Bucks in that same sort of time. They had very similar sort of roster structure and just interesting guys. I mean, really super athletic guys, a lot of tall guards, that sort of stuff. Just I love those teams a lot. I wish they Wish they had went farther, but, you know, it's hard when the Lakers are there. And
exactly.
Can't do much. So.
So we finally order is restored, and we get the Bucks, the Pacers, the Bulls, and Pistons to the east, and the Spurs, Jazz, Mavericks, and Clippers to the west. So,
which is good. That makes a lot more sense that the Bulls, Pistons, and Bucks would be in the east. So
it does.
At least for me, because that's how I'm now. So yeah,
exactly, yeah. So, so I think we're going to take a little break, and we're going to talk about the opposite topic, perhaps. Instead of expansion drafts, we're going to talk about teams going away and dispersal drafts and how that all worked in NBA and ABA history. So we're going to be back in a few moments with that. Are talking about dispersal drafts in the NBA. I know it sounds like an exciting topic, but I promise you that it is actually pretty fascinating.
For us, we find it fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
if you're already listening to this, you're probably already kind of like a basketball nerd, so you should like this, right?
I would guess, you know. So this the NBA the BAA NBL merger happened in 49-50. And there were actually 17 teams in the NBA at that time. And over the next few seasons, it whittles down to – in 51, they're down to 11 teams. In 52, they're down to 10 teams. And then eventually by the 55 season, they are down to the 8 teams that we mm-hmm. – you know, the original 8 teams, I guess you could call them in a sense. So – So they had to obviously spread the wealth during that time. So they had dispersal drafts in 47 and 49 and a couple in 1950 and in 51 and 53 and 54. They had a lot of them. So obviously we're not going to go through all of it, but it just I think there's
– Every pick. Yeah, no, we're breaking out every
exactly.
pick.
We're going to break it down. One thing I just noticed is actually Press Maravich, the father of Pete Maravich, was a part of the Pittsburgh being disbanded. I didn't even know he had played in the NBA. So I think that's pretty interesting. In the one of the 1950 dispersal draft, Ed McCauley ends up going from St. Louis to the St. Louis Bombers to the Celtics, becoming mm-hmm. one of like the important early Celtics. In fact, he was a All-Star and later Hall of Famer who was traded for Bill Russell. And so he was, an important player for them. They also were able to get Bob Cousy in a later dispersal draft in 1950 after Chicago disbanded. So the Celtics were able to really, build up their roster through these expansion drafts.
They do well in these, which
yeah.
A part of the old Celtics lore of team building is they had a lot more players in these drafts than most other teams.
Sure.
So.
I'm
not saying they're cheating.
Little,
I actually don't know how they're
confusing
really...
on how exactly it did work. You know, as far as the numbers go, there's a really good. And I'm taking a lot of this from a post at APBR.org, the message board, advanced statistics message board, where there's a really great breakdown mm-hmm. of the dispersal drafts. I recommend everyone look at it. I'm sure we'll link to it in the
I'll link it in the
show notes.
Here.
So, yep. But in Bill Sharman went from Washington to Fort Wayne in 51, and Frank Selvey went to the Lakers, I believe. There are definitely some, big names of the early NBA that were part of those dispersal drafts.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's even more interesting than when you get the ABA dispersal draft.
Yeah,
that's where you really just see a flood of talent just going numerous places as well. And this, it sort of evens out a little bit. Those early dispersal drafts, as we mentioned, it seems to be pretty heavy on Boston and a few teams that I'm assuming they just paid more to get. I actually have no idea, but where the ABA dispersal drafts seem to be a little bit more of let's fill out a lot of these teams, which they did quite well, I think.
Yeah, because the ABA went from, you know, went from quite a big, I think it was a 12-team league at one point, and then ended up at the end being down to six franchises. So they had a, you know, they were definitely failing toward the end there. They had one in 72 where they lost the Floridians and Pittsburgh. Then in 75, the Baltimore franchise folded, and San Diego later folded. And then finally, there was the 76 ABA dispersal draft that happened with the ABA merger. And that was so, of course, the four ABA teams, San Antonio, the Nets, and Denver and Indiana were joined the NBA, but they're. The NBA had no interest in Kentucky and St. Louis, so they so the players on those teams ended up being dispersed through the NBA. And you got some real big stars here. I mean, Artis Gilmore ends up in Chicago. Marvin Barnes ends up in Detroit. Maurice Lucas ends up – Portland ends up getting Maurice Lucas and Moses Malone. And this is before Moses Malone, anyone understands what kind of player he's really going to be. And in Portland, in what, you know, seems ridiculous, doesn't, you know, keep him very long. But and then San Antonio gets Louis Dampier, who was a three-point specialist. So a lot of, you know, really important talent, you know, was part of this draft. So so it's definitely a you know, it's definitely a big deal. Then there's some interesting coverage from Sports Illustrated of sort of the, you know, the last days of the ABA and how it's kind of all breaking apart, and how how the NBA owners are kind of treating the ABA, and how, you know, they're making them kind of pay through the tooth, and then setting up, of course, you know, they don't know how big of a deal this is going to be, but what ended up really biting the NBA was the deal they set up with the Spirits, where they were able to get a piece of the NBA television revenue, which
in perpetuity, too.
Yeah, forever. Yeah, I mean, they've earned $300 million of that in 38 years, and finally that was settled for $500 million. So. They're going to actually, I guess, get a little bit of television revenue still, but most of it, that deal is going to be, you know, going to finally be, if not finished, at least, you know, pretty much done.
Before that new TV deal signed, yes.
That's an amazing, right? Yeah. I mean, that's obviously.
We are not giving the Spirit of St. Louis owners, you know, a chunk of our gigantic TV deal.
But that's obviously an amazing deal for. Yeah. You know, being bought out.
It's one of the most fascinating. Yeah, if you haven't read anything about that or something, I mean, a lot has been written about it, but it's just one of the most fascinating, like, sports business deals ever. Like, it's something that gets studied in sports business classes and stuff too, because of that reason. It's just a very interesting, and it's a calculated risk by those guys that ended up paying off. But it's just so funny to see the NBA have so little confidence in their future. Which, I mean, understandably. I mean, you look at the league and where it was and what basketball was at that time. Like, I get where they would be like, all right, whatever, dude. Like, yeah, okay. Like, you know what I mean? I totally get them being like, yeah, all right, we'll give you like $1,000 every year. That's fine.
Sure, whatever.
And then, like,
what's this going to be worth? Like, yeah.
All right, like, this stupid league. Nobody wants to pay for this to be on TV. So just different. I mean, it just tells you a lot about how sports on TV at the time, the league, all that sort of stuff built in. Real quick before we move on, I found an interesting name in the the 72 dispersal draft. There's Tracy Trapuka, who we'll find out. Kelly Trapuka will be later on the Charlotte Hornets. He is not related, though.
Oh,
believe it or not.
Interesting.
I was shocked.
Two Trapukas, yeah. That would have been a weird age difference. So, I would have figured brothers, but yeah, that's.
No, not even related. I can't find that they're related. I'll continue looking, but as far as I can tell, yeah. Oh, you know what? No, that might have been a son. Never mind. Okay, that was a brother, I believe.
Was it a sibling or was it a...
Yeah, I believe it was a sibling. Yeah, here we go. I just found the obituary for Frank Trapuka, who was a star at Notre Dame. And it says he has sons.
Yeah, Kelly played at Notre Dame too.
Yeah. Let's see.
I looked up, because I was looking up a lot of brothers for something, and I didn't remember the Trapukas.
Yeah, it says he has survived, and this could be, I mean, maybe there's another Tracy Trapuka that it says he has survived by his wife and sons, Kelly and Mark, as well as his sons, Chris, Tracy, Todd, and Timothy. Okay, so I think Tracy might have been from another marriage, I believe.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yes, because he's survived by his wife and sons and his sons.
There you go.
So there's four and his sons, and then there's two wife
Tracy
and sons.
Tracy Trebucca is not in Basketball Reference, so maybe never played. Maybe yeah, that, because a lot of these guys who are actually involved in that who are involved in these expansion dispersal drafts, several of them don't have a, you know, Basketball Reference link. So, you know, I guess the dispersal ones, that almost all of them would have at least played some in the league, but
we'll cover it more during our Chipuka podcast.
Sure. So obviously that'll be
the Chipuka family Chipuka podcast.
Files.
Which I'd like to do.
We'll mark it down on the
list. Not anytime soon, but you know, I'd like to at some point. We're really digging, like in seven years when we have nobody else. We'll do that one. But yeah, no rush.
Once we've recorded all of NBA's history, we will do the Chipuka podcast. All right, that sounds good. All right, well, we're going to take a little break, and then we will be back with part two of the expansion teams.
All right, we're back with our final part talking expansion teams, and these ones we're going to start at 1988, which you'll be familiar with a lot of these teams. A lot of our listeners, I think this is going to be, especially for you and I, is going to be very vivid for us because we remember these teams. You know, I obviously don't remember these ones quite as much. I'm a little bit younger, but we're going to get to future ones that I definitely remember. But obviously, I remember these franchises, know a lot about the beatings, and that's the Charlotte Hornets and the Miami Heat who both came in. The Charlotte Hornets, they were 20-62 their first year. Miami was 15-67-50. That would be impressive. But yeah, these are two teams that obviously have vivid memories of. What are your thoughts, Hornets, Heat, and key players as well?
Yeah, well, the Hornets, there was an interesting profile on their first season within the last year or so. I think it was for, like, a Charlotte magazine that really kind of went in depth, like an oral history of them. And it was interesting to see how that team was put together and the and also just how the city embraced them. And because they actually were kind of, you know, went with kind of guys who were sort of stars. I mean, Kurt Rambis, obviously, he was older, but he was very well known for being, you know, the grinder for the Lakers. Kelly Trebucca had been, you know, a fairly big star for the Pistons, but was kind of traded before they had their championship teams. You know, Rex Chapman and Muggsy Bogues were future stars. Of course, Bogues had, you know, with the small and because of being 5 foot four or whatever was, you know, eventually became a cult favorite in the NBA. I believe had some ties to the area. So they kind of went the route almost that you like, I would think you shouldn't go, which is like taking players that kind of have name value that are good for the box office and taking like, guys who are sort of like regional, but it ended up working.
Yeah.
So it was
very interesting. And this has been adopted by a few because there's sort of been other teams that have had this expansion teams. I mean, obviously, if you go to baseball, people are familiar with the Arizona Diamondbacks. They're obviously a team that in their second year, you know, went right forward and really tried to be a title contender right off the bat and got a lot of older guys initially. Whereas, you know, the Rays who came in, you know, similar time went the complete opposite route and just went young. So it's interesting to see that sort of different dichotomy of some teams really are kind of immediately out of the gates, and other teams are sort of slow build. But the Hornets, yeah, as you mentioned, it seemed risky on paper, but it worked. And they were a huge box office draw right off the bat, and the team and the city really embraced them more than really any other expansion team.
Yeah, and they got pretty good by the, you know, by the mid-90s. I mean, they really were, they had some, you know, borderline playoff to very good teams in the mid-90s until 2002 when they moved to New Orleans. And they were, you know, they did well with their young players. I mean, Chapman, Bogues, and Curry all were pretty young and ended up being, you know, successful players for the franchise. So they did well there in, you know, in drafting or just selecting the young players who they ended up getting. Miami, they had Rory Sparrow, Grant Long, and Ronnie Cicely, who became, you know, kind of a star for them. I know was kind of their name player for a while, but they definitely were not as first year were definitely not as successful, although they got good pretty quick. I mean, they were about in a similar time frame. In fact, they were a better team. You know, they were a pretty elite team in the late 90s. You know, had, I think, a 60-plus win season and were, you know, made some deep playoff runs. So they probably probably in the decade they had a little bit more success, but at least the first year it was definitely the Hornets, I would say, who had the advantage, even though it was a 5-game difference. I think the Hornets, I think those uniforms also, they kind of captured.
Yeah, I was going to actually say it's pretty interesting. The Hornets, we sort of romanticize them because of the uniforms and then the players, obviously with Bogues and Johnson and Mourning, and they just seem like they would have been a way better team than they were, and, you know, starter jackets and teal and all that sort of stuff. And you look at their history, and they're really, I think, in a lot of ways overrated by, I think we sort of assume that they were a better team than they really were, and they never really ever put it together. Like, as you mentioned, the Heat really quickly, I mean, they went to an Eastern Conference Finals by 96, really, I think, was a better team in a shorter amount of time, or maybe not in a shorter amount of time, but prolonged in that little period of the 90s, ended up being a better team than the Hornets, but we don't think of them that way. We think of the Hornets as a successful franchise in the 90s, but I don't think we do that with the Miami Heat when it's really, I mean, record-wise, the Heat definitely have the claim to doing that.
I mean, it's fairly close, but you're right. I think overall the Heat do definitely have that advantage. And it's funny because, of course, the Heat are now such a are kind of a star team, even without LeBron to a certain extent. I mean, sure, they're definitely that, you know, that cool team, you know, and the Hornets are, you know, maybe they'll get a little bit of that this year with the, you know, remaking the jerseys and some, you know, especially if they end up being better than people expect. But, you know, it's just interesting how that's changed over the years.
And having Pat Riley in there helped as well, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
For, you know, I mean, he made them into not only a good team, but also gave them the star power. And obviously you had a confluence of guys going there as well, you know, the Tim Hardaways and eventually Mornings and that sort of stuff. So it made sense how they did that. But it's very interesting how we perceive the Hornets. Yeah. And I think they're just such a 90s team that we sort of always kind of give them a lot of credit. And it's not completely undue, but it's interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, and they were running to the ground by bad management too. I mean, that's, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Historically bad. I mean, yeah
exactly.
like much is written about that as well, which is interesting. Real quick here, Miami, they were 3-24 at the end of the calendar year, so they were a not very good team at all. And they actually turn out to be our second tied, actually, for the worst expected win percentage of any team. They were expected to win 15 games and lose 67. Yeah, so
which is their actual record, too.
Not good, yeah. So right as expected. So, yeah, defensive rating, offensive rating, they don't really stand out in either. But, yeah, it's pretty pretty historically bad team.
So the next season, we had two more teams. We have the Timberwolves with 22 wins, the Magic with 18 wins. Kind of the key players for the Wolves, Tony Campbell, Tyrone Corbin, Pooh Richardson, and Sam Mitchell. Of course, Corbin and Mitchell were later coaches. Key player for the Magic were Terry Catledge, Reggie Theus, near the end of his career, and then young Nick Anderson, also Sam Vincent, Otis Smith, and Scott Skiles all played small roles. Skiles ended up being a pretty decent-sized star for them, important player for them when they made the playoff runs. Otis Smith, of course, was later their GM. Mixed record, I guess, for Otis as their general manager. But, I mean, he did sort of build the Dwight Howard team, so we could give him that at least. So, these teams were – again, not so noteworthy, but I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, they're sort of there. I mean, the Magic in particular were an interesting team, but there was also an interesting era in the NBA going on at that time. They actually lead our expansion teams in offensive rating, but they're also the worst in defensive rating. So it's quite interesting there. They grade out kind of in the middle of the road, expected win. The Timberwolves are about the same as well. They're sort of middle of the road. Neither of these teams really. They don't really have the same magic as those other teams, not pun sort of intended, but yeah, you had already lost sort of a lot of guys. I mean, a lot of teams had went a lot of guys had went to the, you know, the Hornets and the Heat and that sort of stuff. And then there is sort of a different sort of way of building teams there. But yeah, there's really not anything particularly exciting about any of these teams. I have a fondness for those early Timberwolves teams. I really love that logo and their jerseys and the color scheme and all that sort of stuff. And the Magic obviously turned into what they turned into. But at the time, they're really just kind of there. And they really got lost in the mix there for a while as well. Yeah. So yeah, there's especially the Timberwolves, we'll get into too. I mean, they might have well not been a franchise for about 10 years, because it was really nothing until Kevin Garnett came.
Right.
And now it's sort of, again, they're in this little weird period. So
yeah. The Magic actually, you know, again, so we're sort of that iconic 90s franchise. I mean, they had the black pinstripes. They, of course, had Shaq and Penny, you know, 2 years in a row, which led to them having some really good teams, making a finals appearance and looking like the team of the future until Shaq left and then Penny had a terrible injury. ACL injury that, you know, made him a far lesser of a player for the rest of his career. But they were, you know, one of the more successful teams in their first 5-6 years. And then it, you know, it kind of fell apart from there. They're almost at the same level of as the Bucks.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the Wolves hitched their wagon to the Isaiah Ryder, Christian Laettner train, and that didn't quite work out too well.
But they got Garnett,
and then that didn't work, and then the Garnett, yeah. So it all worked out. The Wally Zerbiak and Garnett thing helped out, but yeah, they're just a team that's so weird. I mean, I have no memories of them. You know what I'm saying? Of like my youth growing up, like I kind of remember them in NBA Jam, but nobody picked them ever. Like you just faced them right at the beginning, and then like whoever picked the Wolves, like nobody ever in NBA Jam when I played picked them, and they're just kind of there, and it's just such a weird franchise for so long, and they're, you know, finally a little bit relevant now, but it's been a weird run for the Wolves, whereas, you know, the Magic have had a what I would consider a decent amount of success. I mean, they're sort of swimming in place now, but for the most part, I mean, you have a bunch of finals appearances or a few finals appearances, Eastern Conference Finals, and obviously, you know, Shaq, Dwight Howard, you know, just a lot of guys in there, and Tracy McGrady in the early, you know, 2000s, so they certainly have a little bit more than the Wolves, but yeah, interesting teams, interesting expansions as well.
Yeah, and so then we go to 95-96 season with the NBA goes to Canada with the Toronto Raptors, who win 21 games, and the Vancouver Grizzlies with 15 wins.
Remember that?
Yeah. There are actually, you know, a good number of players that you would have heard of. I think it helps that they happened more recently, but key players for the Raptors: Damon Stoudemire, Oliver Miller, Alvin Robertson at the end of his career. They also have youngish Doug Christie, yep. John Sally toward the end of his career as well. Herb Williams played one game for them, and then Vancouver. They were led by Blue Edwards big country Bryant Reeves.
Led quotes. Yeah.
Greg Anthony, Byron Scott, and boy, I can't imagine how much Byron Scott hated being on the.
Oh yeah, that's a guy who would already at this point. How many titles? I mean, he has what? How many titles under his belt?
Three or four. Yeah.
Hey, you're going to Vancouver?
Yeah, cool. he did get 1 year on the Lakers after this to end his career. So I guess he should be happy with. And they also had Gerald Wilkins. And Benoit Benjamin played 13 games there. You know, the Raptors actually drafted B.J. Armstrong first in the expansion draft, but B.J. didn't play for the he went to Golden State instead.
Yeah,
so
immediately traded. Yeah.
I'm not sure what happened.
Which, again, I'm sure B.J. was also ecstatic about.
Yeah, right, exactly.
For the Bulls, who had just won three titles and then, you know, a long playoff run to going to the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah, he was traded by the Raptors to Golden State for a bunch of players. So I'm assuming he didn't want to play in Toronto. So
no, yeah, I don't think so.
The Raptors, they're by the year 2000, season, they're actually a, you know, pretty good team. They have a few good runs in the East with Vince Carter and Tracy McGrady there for a little while. Before that kind of falls apart, and the Grizzlies are historically awful with terrible, terrible uniforms until
you bite your tongue.
Moving to Memphis.
No, the Kodiak Bear grabbing there. The Grizzlies. No, you're wrong.
Now, this raises an interesting question. Do you think I do think that having a horribly unattractive uniform is.
I disagree. I'm not gonna look.
Well, okay. You
agree that they are the best uniforms ever.
Okay,
they're awful.
Accepting whether the Grizzlies have bad or good uniforms. Let's just say, like, as an academic, you know, exercise. Do you think that ugly uniforms are a decent deterrent to having people root for your team?
I think so. Absolutely. I mean, we just talked about the Hornets a little bit ago, a team that was, you know, super supportive. I think a lot of that was they had cool uniforms, a cool logo, just a cool, you know, overall sense of their team. Whereas you look at those Grizzlies and they're just hideous. Like, there's like you see those pictures and I was just joking at the beginning. They're actually just god awful uniforms. But yeah, no, it'd be hard to really root for them at any point. It's weird to say if it was like a chicken or egg, or if it was just because we're saying this because we know Vancouver didn't support them, or, you know, no, but I don't think you're totally off kilter with that. I mean, these are just god awful, you know, and like, because you wouldn't buy it. Could you possibly imagine, even in the 90s, and people were obviously did not care that much about fashion in the 90s, or else they wouldn't have wore half the stuff they did. But like, you don't see anybody with a Vancouver. I mean, have you ever seen somebody with a Vancouver Grizzlies jersey?
I mean, not unless they're ironic, probably.
So. Right, and even then, like, I don't even think like you could pull it off ironically. It's that hideous. But that's what I mean. Whereas, that's a big part of being a fan is, you know, buying T-shirts, buying merchandise, buying that sort of stuff. And they just had a horrible logo, a miserable color scheme. It was like, you know, the poo brown and like teal. It was like, what are you doing? Like, just awful. And what were the accent on their like sleeves? Like, what was that?
Yeah, it was.
It's just
was
like
not
weird
good.
Symbols. Like, I don't even know what it's supposed to be.
Like, sort of tribal or something.
And then you have the weird like broken out like rock font for the Grizzlies and the big Grizzly holding a basket. It's just like, what are you doing?
I do like I like the Grizzly holding the basketball. I will say that. But okay. The rest of it, well, I'm you know, I mean, I don't love it, but I don't know. I have a thing for bears with basketballs, so I don't know. It's just a
okay,
weird thing.
That's it.
I mean, we shouldn't talk
you should
about
the
it,
doctor.
But,
you should definitely yeah. It's suppressed, but yeah.
So and this is interesting. I thought that you know, because there's sort of, I know you have some stuff on kind of the idea of whether there's really a huge amount of disparity or whether there's a whole lot of, you know, teams with extremes at either end during expansion years. But it was interesting, the year of expansion, there were 555 plus win teams in the NBA. And then in 97, there were actually 10 teams that won 54 or more games, which I believe, which I'm almost certain is the NBA record. I think there's been 8 or 7 here and there. But it's interesting that around the time, not exactly in the year, but around that time, there is such a, you know, like all these super teams, or, you know, for lack of a better term, are, and obviously your record is somewhat padded if you have, you know, two new teams that you can get 6 or 7 or 8 wins against. That's going to help, you know, that's going to help you out certainly. But I thought that was kind of, I'm not sure what it says exactly, but I thought it was interesting.
No, absolutely. And I did a little bit of a study here real quick. I just looked at the best and worst team each year. I think if I had time, I would stretch this out a little bit more to be maybe the top three and then the worst three. And then maybe that would give us a little bit more of an idea. But basically what it is, I did the best team of that year and then the worst team of that year and then looked at the win-loss disparity. And in all years from 1997 until – sorry, where did I begin here? 1958, the average difference is 43.2 wins. And then an expansion year is in that same time. It's 46.4. So it's not like insane as we sort of thought of the disparities, but it is only it is 3 wins, and that's fairly significant. 3 wins. So it's there, but yeah, it's certainly, I mean, it's not like we're saying that it's not. I mean, there's definitely a, especially when you look at the trend line as well, it is more significant, the win differential between, you know, in expansion years and in not, but just not as much as I probably would have assumed. But I would like to maybe, and maybe post-show, I'll do this a little bit more, is to stretch that out, and as you sort of mentioned, go over 3 or 5 teams and look at that disparity between what I would really consider the elite teams and then the really down, because I don't know if it's quite going to be as good if you just do the low and just do the high, but interesting nonetheless. So,
yeah. So we're down to our last team. It is the 2004-05 Charlotte Bobcats, who won 18 games. Their key players were Emeka Okafor, who they drafted at number 2, Primo Brejic, the big center, Gerald Wallace, who kind of ended up being probably definitely their best player of the decade. Also, they had Brevin Knight, Melvin Eli, Jason Capono, Steve Smith at the end of his career, Matt Carroll, Eddie House played 300 minutes for them before he latched on to the Celtics and the Heat and those teams. So they had an interesting mix of guys. I also noticed that looking at the entire expansion draft that there was a Zaza Pachulia and also Pedro Drobnjak, of course, who are great members of the 2004-2005 Hawks. So
sure, there we go. Got it in there. Nice.
So this is not, you know, it's not necessarily a historically bad team, but it's definitely a very bad team. And they did not, they were pretty bad until they kind of made a 1 year playoff run as an eighth seed in 2010, got destroyed in the playoffs, and then were historically awful up until 2014 when they had another, a slightly better playoff run. And now they're, of course, they're the Hornets. So, and there's a little bit more excitement about, you know, kind of what they're going to be doing over the next couple of years. They have some pretty good young players and good coach and that kind of thing. So be interesting to see how they end up turning out.
Certainly, yeah. They're an interesting case of they really haven't had. We sort of – every team we've mentioned has sort of had a – maybe the Grizzlies, I would say, is one that's sort of – but then again, they've had this pretty good run with Randolph where, I mean, I really cannot say that the Bobcats have ever had a real – what I would consider a good run. I mean, you mentioned there's those few little – you know, playoff birds and that sort of stuff. And we might see it, you know, this year with the Hornets, and maybe they'll put it, you know, string together a little bit run of playoffs. But yeah, as far as like franchise, I mean, even the Grizzlies have had even a little bit more success, but these guys, I mean, they nothing yet at all. And it's been a lot of years as well. I mean, we're talking 2004, you know,
it's been,
almost
it's been
10
a decade,
years
yeah,
with very little. And you really don't see that. All the teams we've mentioned have had their rough spots, but it usually within that first decade, there was at least some sort of, you know, multiple years with playoff runs, and yeah, the Bobcats, unfortunately, are not.
I think the Jazz are the only other team that didn't. It had a similar thing.
Right, and they had to try out loud and be as awful as they were, like, because they had a clearly drunk GM that just went wild and had no idea what he was doing. I forgot, there's a book that kind of covers all their transactions. It's just like he would just write stuff on, like, napkins while he was drunk and do these. Like, it was just not good at all.
All right. Well, that's about it. Is there anything else that in any of your crunching the numbers that you found that's interesting that we can talk about?
Not really. I just thought I'd go kind of a recap right now. Look at all the teams and look at sort of where they ranked. The offensive rating, our worst offensive team of all the expansion teams, as I mentioned, is the Chicago Packers, 1961 at 90, which is not good at all. But shockingly, they're also our best defensive team at 95. But as mentioned, they probably is a different NBA as well with different leagues. So the numbers can be a little bit different there. The best offense was the 89 Orlando Magic at 105.8. And then the worst defense was, of course, the Orlando Magic. So there you go. You get a little bit of a interesting thing there with the offensive ratings. Expected win percentage was tied. The two teams with the worst were the Miami Heat and the Vancouver Grizzlies. So it's the 88 Miami Heat and the 95 Grizzlies for expected wins. The 1966 Chicago Bulls are our best expected win. And then the next best was the 1970 Portland Trail Blazers in there. And then obviously expected losses will sort of reflect the same thing there. I did a little bit of a difference here. The win differential between the expansion team that we're talking about and the best team in the league, and actually the best one was the 1968 Milwaukee Bucks. They only had a 30 win differential between them and obviously the best team in the league that year. The worst was obviously, you can probably assume, the Vancouver Grizzlies, who were 57 games worse than the 72 win Chicago Bulls. So that was an easy one that I knew was going to happen. But yeah, 50. It's just funny that there were 57 wins, you know, worse than the Bulls. That's just like shockingly, it's just hard to comprehend, but yeah, that's when it happens, when you have the best team ever and then one of the worst teams ever. So Vancouver Grizzlies, yeah that's them there, right? Real quick, I did attendance rank as well, which I wanted to see. As I mentioned, the Charlotte Hornets in 1988 were the number one team in attendance. The 1989 Minnesota Timberwolves were also the number one team in attendance. And mind you, this is total attendance, so total numbers, so I didn't get a percent here, so it might be a little bit different. A big reason why the Timberwolves were number one is they played in the Metrodome at that point, the Triple H Dome at that point, so they, I'm sure, were packing guys in. The Toronto Raptors, 1995, they were third in attendance, and that was the year that they played in the they played in a weird arena.
Did they play in the Sky Dome?
The Sky Dome, yeah, that was okay. It. Yeah, right. I was blanking if they had an in-between. No, but they were in the Sky Dome, the weird, like, tarped-off, you know, Sky Dome. That was, like, when the Pistons played in the Silver Dome, and right, it was just, like, horrendous looking, and they just had, like, white curtains everywhere and all that stuff. The Orlando Magic, they were 12th in the league in attendance. The Miami Heat were also 12th in the league. Dallas Mavericks, as mentioned, they were 18th. And, of course, the Vancouver Grizzlies, who started off real well with their 20th in attendance rank for their initial year, and it never really ever got better for the Vancouver Grizzlies. Yeah. So,
or Vancouver.
That was a historic, not very good idea for an expansion team, the Vancouver Grizzlies. Whereas most of these teams, I mean, a few moved here and there, but I think maybe, let me ask you, out of all these, what was the biggest mistake of bringing any of these teams in the league in your mind, if there was a mistake,
like the specific team or what the teams did.
Maybe just a, I guess, because yeah, city wise, I mean, would it be Vancouver, New Orleans? Do you think would be?
Yeah, I mean, those are the ones where it failed the quickest. Obviously, San Diego's, but I mean, they've gone back to New Orleans, so I guess they've at least demonstrated that New Orleans is a pretty viable market for the NBA. It's hard to say. I mean, but I would say, I mean, I think Vancouver and New Orleans, the Jazz, I think they were both done in by just having such incredibly terrible teams.
Right.
I mean, I think that's part of it. I mean, Vancouver's a nice city that probably could support a team under the right circumstances. They just basically did everything wrong. I mean, at least the Jazz brought in like a really talented, a guy who was perceived as a huge star, and they gave a lot of weight, but they, you know, they weren't necessarily like the most awful. I mean, they, after that first year, they were more like, you know, like a 35 level win team.
Right. Where the Grizzlies followed up 2 years later by winning 8
right.
games.
Right. I mean, they were, like, in the lockout year. I mean, so they were, they were never good until they moved to Memphis. But, you know, even though they've had a similar timeline as far as playoff success as Toronto, or at least making the playoffs as Toronto did, Toronto had some decent teams in between there.
And exciting teams.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and Vancouver just had nothing. I mean, they made everything.
Like, I like Mike Bibby and I like Sharif Abdul-Rahim, but, like, that's not – I mean, Vince Carter was, you know, jumping over fools and, you know, winning dunk contests, and you have Mike Bibby and Bryant Reeves and Sharif Abdul-Rahim, so it makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every other team was, you know, had a decent or to good team within 5 years, certainly within 10 years. I think that New Orleans and Vancouver stand out, and I guess the Chicago Packers sort of stand out for their ineptitude.
Certainly, yeah. And for the most part, I mean, they're pretty stable when you look at these and sort of it'd be interesting. I think it'd be interesting if somebody, maybe, you know, us or someone else could look at the other league's expansion teams and see sort of the stability between the two. Because I feel like the NBA is not bad. I mean, you have a few moves here and there, but I without knowing the context of the other leagues, I can't really say. But yeah, the NHL in particular, I'd be very interested in, because I'm just not, you know, obviously an NHL historian at all. But they're fairly stable for the NBA, I think, for the expansion
teams. Yeah, so. I mean, there were some moves here and there. You know, there's been, you know, at least four or five. I mean, Seattle, but that was, you know, that was 40 years later almost. So that one I don't think quite counts, you know. But, you know, there were probably four to five of these teams that, you know, that have moved. The rest of them, you know, pretty much have stayed put. So that's not a terrible percentage. I think a lot of it did happen during that tumultuous 70s time, where I think it adds a little bit to the feeling of instability, just because, you know, there was so much change during that time anyway, that, you know, moving the franchises, I think, adds to that a little bit. But since the 80s, it has happened. There has been, you know, quite, you know, into the 90s, there's been quite a bit less of that, you know.
Certainly.
All right, Rich. Well, I think we did a pretty good job here. I was worried that we were going to overhype it, but I feel pretty comfortable that we gave a good product out to people. So, so thanks everyone for checking us out. We would love it if you would follow us on Twitter at Over and Back NBA. We are part of the HPB Network podcast feed on iTunes. If you look for Hardwood Paroxysm Network, or if you search for Over and Back NBA, you should be able to find it pretty easily in iTunes, or there's a link at the bottom of the post at thepodiumgame.com that you can check out our iTunes feed. We would love it if you subscribed. We would absolutely love it if you left a review and a rating, and if you do so and let us know either on Twitter or as a comment on the post, then we will talk about any basketball related subject that you wish for 2 minutes. So take advantage of that if you're interested in hearing us talk about something, you know, pretty much whatever you want.
Absolutely. We encourage it. So definitely leave us a review and follow us on Twitter and continue. It's been good interactions on Twitter as well. So we like that. We like feedback as well.
Yeah, we've been getting some good stuff.
Tell us when we're wrong. Tell us if you disagree. Tell us if you agree. Tell us you like. We just like anything.
Yeah,
just
we like to talk. We're talkers. So, all right, Rich. Well, thanks again for another good show.